officer. So she walks over to the officer and asks for if he would help her. She doesn't know who these men are. And that's when you see the ICE agent pick her up and take her back to the unmarked van.
Why was she picked up, Dominique?
She physically picked up, or why was she arrested?
Arrested.
So what she is being charged with is assault on a peace officer. So the version of the story that the federal agent is putting forth is that Andrea Velez purposefully walked into his path in order to protect whoever their target was and knocked that ICE agent off balance and hit him in the head. It's a complete fabrication, didn't happen. And I believe it's more of a number one, racial profiling. They were speaking to her in Spanish, even though she was demonstrating that she was could speak fluent English and that she was a US citizen. And I think it was a matter of, let's see if she is a US citizen. And if she is, then we'll slap on these charges. It's an issue of arrest now, ask questions later.
So straight up racial profiling.
100%, 100%. Andrea Velez has, she's a darker skinned Latino, and 100% I believe that this was racial
We
profiling.
have to leave it there. We'll continue to follow this case. Dominique Bubion, and one of the attorneys hoping to represent Andrea Velez, a U.S. citizen arrested by ICE. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots, from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 o'clock. Next up is PDX Progressive Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Sherry with PDX Progressive Talk Radio. The song apparently must have failed to load it. We're having some technical difficulties, so you'll have to hang on just one moment. But I did want to let you know that you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. And if you're listening online, you're at www.kboo.fm. And we want to thank you for the honor of your listening ears. Today is July 2nd, and we're so happy to be able to bring you information, entertainment, and news here on KBOO Community Radio. Today, I have a guest. He is Dr. Ray Nayara. I hate trying to say new last names. It's Ray Nayara.
Correct.
Hi. Let me go ahead and you are a psychologist and an expert on tobacco dependence and treatment. You are an expert in studying the potential for reducing the harm caused by tobacco products and tobacco product cessation. Since you are on the line in here, I have a few accolades, so just hold on. You have some impressive credentials. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Ray, by this, if that's okay.
Sure.
He previously taught and conducted research at Brown University, Johns Hopkins, Bloomberg School of Public Health, the Georgetown Medical Center, and the School of Public Health at the University of Maryland. He is a recipient of many grants from the National Institutes of Health, numerous foundations, and private industry, and has published over 400 peer-reviewed articles, commentaries, and book chapters, including the book, The Tobacco Dependence Treatment Handbook, A Guide to Best Practices. Dr. Neera, thank you for joining me.
A pleasure to be here.
Can I call you Dr. Ray?
You can call me Ray, yes.
Thank you, sir. How was your day today?
Pretty good so far. I'm on the East Coast where we're getting through some thunderstorms, but everything's calm right now.
Very good. So you've gone past the heat wave that you've been experiencing back.
Yeah, I think that finally broke.
Well, I want to welcome you to KBOO in Portland. We are the my show specifically is, as far as I know, somebody can call and correct me, the only progressive talk radio show in the city of Portland. And I am so excited to hear about your research and some of the policies that have either been updated or changed. You've studied health effects of various nicotine delivery systems for decades. From a scientific standpoint, why do products like nicotine pouches pose less risk and contribute than combustible tobacco? You'll have to excuse me, it's early here.
So my background really started out in terms of trying to understand why cigarette smokers, you know, get addicted and why they find it so hard to quit. And then that transitioned into doing studies on, you know, methods to help cigarette smokers quit smoking. And the background there is that cigarette smoking, as we all know, is the most toxic form of, you know, tobacco and nicotine delivery. So, you know, I guess you could say, you know, part of my mission is to figure out ways to get people to quit smoking because, you know, it's just, you know, as we all know, terrible for health and longevity. In, you know, the past, you know, 10 to 15 years, there's been kind of this movement and transition away from cigarette smoking to other kinds of tobacco products, and also, you know, more specialized products that either contain less or no tobacco, and just deliver nicotine. And that's of interest because if we can give people, you know, nicotine in a way that, you know, they desire, but is in a safer form, then hopefully that makes it easier for them to quit smoking cigarettes and transition to these safer products. Now, you did ask, you know, what you know, specifically about nicotine pouches makes them potentially more safe than cigarettes. And the pouches are a more recent innovation. There have been, you know, oral tobacco products around for a long time. Mm-hmm. But those tend to be, you know, like chew and snuff and things like that. But those tend to be still pretty toxic. The pouches actually do not contain tobacco. They're more or less a clean, you know, nicotine delivery system. And like I said, that's pretty new, you know, past 5 years or so where these pouches have really come to prominence. And the Food and Drug Administration, which regulates tobacco and nicotine products here in the U.S., has recently authorized at least one nicotine pouch product for sale. But what that means is that the company that produces those pouches had to demonstrate to the satisfaction of the FDA that that these products were in fact safer. And so they had to do, you know, biochemical studies and behavioral studies and so forth. And all of that had to be reviewed by the scientists at FDA in order for them to issue an authorization order. So here we have a product that is new, but is, you know, has undergone scientific review and is turning out to be quite popular. I think the way I look at it is that's good news for smokers if they can potentially switch away from smoking to using these products.
So I did send you a list of questions, but as a former smoker, I quit almost 10 years ago. And as a former smoker,
good for you.
Thank you. And dealing with a lot of people who have tried to quit, I mean, my parents were smokers and my step parents were, and they all quit at some point. As a former smoker, I've gone through some of the things that you've said and some of the study information. And what I find missing is the most daunting part of quitting smoking is, one, it lowers your stress level. And actually what that is, as you know, is just getting yourself out of the situation and breathing, going outside, taking a walk and relaxing, right? Well, smokers right. don't necessarily associate that as the same thing. So where I would go, while the nicotine patches from what you're talking about seem to be a alternative to the input delivery system, it doesn't seem to address the anxiety, the boredom, the habit forming that cigarette smoking invokes, right? So, you know, keep that in your bonnet for a minute, because I wanted to talk with you about the fact that this is what gets me about childhood addiction and stuff. This year, Oregon rejected a proposal to ban flavored nicotine pouches and imposed a higher tax, while Washington apparently moved forward with restrictions, and there's some controversy about that. What does the evidence say about how these policies impact health outcomes, particularly among adult smokers who are trying to quit? And I mostly think that's an important question because chew has been known to cause cancer in the gums. Is there any indication this will happen?
Well, so far, no. And part of why I say that is because there's a similar product that's been available for a longer time called Swedish Snus, which is similarly less harmful, but not quite as good as the nicotine pouches. But the smokers in Sweden over the past 30 years have quite dramatically migrated away from smoking, and they started using these oral snus products. And again, it's the specific ones that come from Sweden. And their smoking-related illnesses at a population level dropped dramatically. So wow. Now Sweden has the lowest rate of smoking-related heart disease. The lung cancer rates are the lowest in the European Union. And so, you know, that's pretty good epidemiological evidence to suggest that, you know, people who successfully can switch to these products will be doing something good for their health,
right?
And mainly that's, you know, switching away from cigarettes. The point you raised earlier, though, about these products don't give you the same thing that cigarettes might, I agree, and that's part of what we need to figure out is how can people use these products successfully to wean themselves, you know, away from smoking. And that's where, you know, I think we need to do some research and studies and try to figure that out, how to help smokers transition to these safer products. There are ongoing studies to try to figure that out, but it's still kind of early days before, you know, we kind of get the answers to those questions.
Right, and because myself and I was perplexed for years and years. A former supervisor of mine was a former smoker, and he said he just threw his cigarettes away one day and just never picked another one up. And I tried for 14 years to quit, and I was like, how did he do that? And so in 2015, that's essentially what I did. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I've had my time. I'm moving on. And I never touched. But my husband, he quit for 2 years, which was a struggle for him. And he has expressed boredom. He's expressed stress and anxiety and depression. And he continually ends up going back. It's contentious.
Yeah. And right. And there are lots of different pathways, you know, to quitting. You know, your example, many people manage to do just that, but it takes it can take a long time, many years before people get to that point. And other folks just struggle and, you know, need to find other ways, you know, to help them through the journey. And, you know, the way I look at it, these products are just, you know, another opportunity. They're not going to be the silver bullet, but they presented another opportunity. And again, what's new is, you know, these products really are reduced risk, unlike, you know, the previous tobacco and nicotine products. So things are kind of moving in the right direction, but slowly. And we want to, you know, figure out ways to get people to, you know, transition as soon as they can.
So what are your thoughts on the fact that Oregon rejected proposed a ban on flavored nicotine pouches and imposed higher taxes?
Yeah, well, you know, the issue with flavors tends to be a concern about, you know, non-smokers, especially youth, you know, being attracted to these products because they have flavors and so forth. And I understand that concern, you know, that, you know, nobody wants kids to be, you know, taking up and using these products.
Right.
And yet, you know, I think the jury's still out a little bit on, you know, how much, you know, the flavors are really a major factor in attracting kids, but, you know, people feel the pressure, lawmakers feel the pressure, and that, you know, they want to do something. So I kind of, you know, I understand the motivation. The taxing issue is a bit more tricky because, you know, if you want to tax products, my thinking is it makes sense to tax the most toxic products the most,
yes,
which would be cigarettes.
Right.
And if you want to provide some kind of incentive to people to use, you know, reduced risk products, doing that with, you know, lower taxes might be a way to do it. But, you know, politicians like tax money.
Well, no, you're on the right track, because here in Portland, just being in the grocery store, I happen to glance at prices, right, of cigarettes, and they've, since I've quit, exponentially increased, and some of them are $12 a pack, and if you're an everyday smoker, you smoke a pack a day, that's expensive. My husband was up to $70 a week, which I find incredibly ridiculous, and if they tax the pouches less, smokers are going to be, well, heck, I'll give that a try, because in their brain, the nicotine is what they're depending on, right? Kind of like coffee drinkers and caffeine.
Yeah, and that's the idea. You know, you provide incentives for people to, you know, move to you know, doing healthier things, and quitting smoking is one of the best things you can do for your health.
Yes, so exactly. You know. Well, that's what they say anyway. So your work emphasizes the continuum of risk when it comes to nicotine. Can you explain that idea and how it might help reshape how regulators approach different tobacco and nicotine products?
Yeah, it's not complicated. You know, basically, inhaling anything that is burned, you know, the tobacco leaf, is at the top of the list of you know, harm. But then once you move away from combustion, you know, burning products and smoking them, then you enter into an area where there's potentially reduced risk. And, you know, again, over the past 10, 15 years, we've, well, you know, we discovered and that there are other ways to deliver nicotine that are, in fact, less toxic. You know, a good example of that, actually, then this has been a product that's been around for a long time, is nicotine replacement therapy. So, you know, that's like the nicotine chewing gum, yep, or lozenges, or the patches, nicotine patch.
Yep.
Yeah. Those are safe.
Yeah.
Because, well, they don't contain, you know, the tobacco toxins, but they still deliver nicotine. And so I guess the idea with other products like pouches is, can they approach the safety level of nicotine replacement? And you know, we're seeing some success. And I think, you know, you don't have to like the tobacco companies or the nicotine companies, but I think they're starting to respond to their consumers, and they have it in their power now to make products that are reduced risk. But it's, you know, it's tricky. They have a bad history. You know, nobody likes them. Nobody trusts them. And so we have to kind of find a middle road where, you know, if these products are in fact safer, can we prove that? And that's why we have the FDA now regulating tobacco and nicotine products. And you know, they're the gatekeepers. And so we should, you know, rely on regulation and, you know, the ability of the FDA to do its job to tell consumers, okay, these products are indeed, you know, safer than smoking cigarettes.
But,
and you know, maybe not 100% safe, but dramatically more safe.
But at one time, they said that cigarette smoking was safe.
Well, right. And that's why you have to have a questioning mind about all of this stuff. And, you know, as an academic researcher, I always turn to the research literature. So, you know, I look for the studies and I evaluate the quality of the studies to tell me that, in fact, you know, these products are safer.
Well, and who is supporting the studies, right? If a tobacco company is supporting a study that says smoking is safe, that is to be questioned.
Absolutely, it's to be questioned. And that's why the research community needs to, you know, also do their own work and verify the findings, you know, doing independent research. So, you know, all of that needs to take place.
I do have a question, though, and the reason why I said, so they say that quitting smoking will positively impact your life, is I've personally known smokers who quit years and years, like 30 years before a lung cancer diagnosis, and was that person was told that their lung and brain cancer diagnosis was a direct result from that time 30 years ago that they smoked.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, well, once you smoke, and it's our air. I mean, there's a lot of different things. What in your research has levied you to the point that these nicotine pouches are going to be any less corrosive, any less toxic, or any less severely impactful on somebody's body than smoking or chew or snuff?
Yeah, so two things. One is we need to do studies where we monitor people's health and, you know, people that use these products. The issue with that is it takes a long time to find out, you know.
Yeah, really, and how many lives.
But the good news is that we have very sophisticated ways to look at the current biological effects of these products on what are called biomarkers of exposure and harm. So we know pretty well why it is that tobacco and cigarettes, you know, cause biological damage that may lead to cancer. And it doesn't look like these products are having a similar effect on the biology of individuals. So, you know, that you can think of that as kind of like an early warning system. And so far, you know, the studies are telling us that, you know, at least from a, you know, a current, you know, biomarker perspective, these products seem to be doing much better. Now, of course, we need to keep an eye on everything.
Right.
And keep doing the studies and so forth. But, you know, at least in terms of that kind of information, it's looking positive.
You have been such a wonderful, insightful, and informational person. Thank you so much. Dr.
Well,
Rand,
my pleasure.
Fabulous. What closing statement might you have?
If you're a smoker, you probably have thought about quitting or maybe really want to quit. There are ways to do it. You know, just reach out and get some help and some advice. And, you know, there are a lot of tried and true methods. But also consider switching to, you know, some reduced risk products that may help you get closer to your goal.
What information might you be able to offer as far as a website where people could go, or maybe an email address so people could reach out if they wanted to like the FDA or whomever?
Well, you could absolutely just, you know, go on to the web and Google for FDA Center for Tobacco Products, and they will have a lot of information there. Both for, you know, regulators, but also for consumers.
Where can people find the Tobacco Dependence Treatment Handbook, A Guide to Best Practices?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. It's been a while since we wrote that, but probably you could find it on Amazon.
Okay. So there you have it, everybody. Dr. Ray, I really appreciate your time, your attention, and your diligence to this issue.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you, sir. And I will reach out if anybody comes to me with questions. I'll reach out to your assistant.
That would be great.
Thank you, sir. Make it a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. So if I'm opening up the phones, if anybody has any questions, thank you for listening. I really appreciate the honor of your time talking or listening to Dr. Naira of our he is a psychologist who studies the impacts of nicotine and smoking and cessation, and had some really good information on tools to help you quit smoking. And there's this nicotine pouch out that's available. I don't really know a lot about it. Apparently there are some that come in flavors, and I think that's wrong. We should really push to have that banned, because something I wanted to say to him is, teenagers, if it tastes icky, they probably aren't going to do it, no matter how little it costs. But if it tastes good, like minty or cotton candy or whatever, yeah, they're attracted to that kind of thing. And tobacco companies specifically target children, young people, by offering flavored products like that. And they're hideous companies. They are even government, so they get subsidies from the government. Tobacco farmers do. So not only is our government supporting the potential ailing of, as they do, of our citizens, but they are also supporting addicting kids, and I just think that's horrible. While we wait for calls, did you know that the big terrible bill is sweeping budget reconciliation package? It passed on July 1st narrowly, and as you may have heard, JD Vance was the tie-breaking vote. it's a 1,000-page document, but I did hear this morning that it's gone back to the House and they can't even write the language of the bill because the thing that passed was in some places very egregious and in other places suspiciously maybe not legal. So apparently I have a phone call. Do we know who it is? Okay. Hello, caller.
Yeah, I just wanted to let people know that the safest and most effective and efficient way to stop nicotine addiction is to acquire a certain herbal supplement, preferably in a tincture form, although it does come in capsule form, called St. John's Wort.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Wort being spelled W-O-R-T. There's two Oregon companies that I know of that are naturally crafted or organic. One is Williams Herb Farms down in Southern Oregon. The other one is Oregon's Wild Harvest. But one of my friends from work many years ago, he had been chewing tobacco like Copenhagen from the time he was 14 until the time he was 41. He did a little bit of research way back in like 2001, found out that the St. John's wort fits into the same chemoreceptors in your brain that the nicotine fits into. Hmm. Within 3 weeks, he was completely off of the nicotine. And by the way, the nicotine, any kind of oral nicotine, is eventually going to probably cause cancer.
Yeah.
Nicotine is a vasoconstrictor. That means it makes your blood vessels smaller in diameter, and it's going to impede circulation, which is not going to make you any healthier. By the way, I don't know why in the hell people ever get addicted to nicotine in the first place, because the two times that I tried it, first time tried to smoke a cigarette when I was about 13 at the behest of one of the other kids in my woodshop class, and I was it felt like a feeling of impending doom. I found out later on was the description I should have used at the time, although I was not that articulate at 13 to figure that out. But the point of it is about at the age of 24, one of my coworkers, here, try a cigarette, you know, and I tried it. But when I inhaled that nicotine, it made me just dizzy, sick.
Yeah, it can do that.
It was a horrible, horrible feeling that I wouldn't want to put upon anybody. So I don't know why in the hell any of you people out there that are addicted to nicotine, if you're human, have the same makeup as I am, and I think I'm human, you should have had the same reaction the first time you tried either chewing tobacco or smoking a cigarette.
It's not.
And you should have stopped. You should have stopped before you started. I don't know what the hell is wrong with your brain, because my brain told me this is bad, very bad. I'm going to stop now. I don't know why in the hell this.
Okay. Hold on. Hold on. Everybody thinks differently. Everybody's system reacts to substances differently. All right. And for someone to continue moving forward in that direction, we have nothing to say about that.
Everybody I've ever talked to, I asked them when they had their first smoke or their first chew, and they said, I got dizzy and I got lightheaded and I felt funny. And I go, why in the hell did you continue? And they're like, I don't know.
Because they made that choice at the time, and that's all that matters. Now they're trying to fix that choice.
Yeah, but it means that something is defective in their system.
No, it doesn't. I'm going to go ahead and move on to other callers. Thank you. Have a good day now. I have another caller. Hello, do we have a name?
Hello.
Hi, how are you today?
I am continue to be dangerously well.
Hi, how are you, Jeff?
I hope you're well, too.
I am awesome. And yes, if people get obnoxious, I will kick them off the phone.
Well,
but you are awesome.
I'm going to tell you this right now in response to the previous caller. I am a defective human. Every human on this planet is a defective human.
Absolutely.
And I will not be judged by what goes into my mouth. I will be judged by what comes out of my mouth.
Okay.
Now, Sherry, I'm so disappointed that your guest, Dr. Nayef, is gone, because I had 2 points and 2 questions. Very, very briefly, 2 points. Number one, Adolf Hitler called tobacco the red man's revenge. He was not wrong in that.
Right.
Point number two, it's called the MSA, the Master Settlement Agreement. It was between the states and the tobacco companies about 20, almost 30 years ago, and massive sums of money were transferred from the corporations to the states, and most of the states, rather than saying we're going to devote this money to tobacco cessation, devoted the money by, just folded the money right into their general budgets to avoid deficit spending. And it is a corrupt thing from the start. The MSA, the Master Settlement Agreement.
Wow. Where can we find out about that?
As everybody, kids, you can go to your Google.
Okay.
Now, the two questions that I had that will not be answered because the good doctor has been shown the door, and that's okay.
No, he said he had, there was arrangements that he could only be here for 30 minutes or less.
I understand. In that sense, I have these questions generally for you and for us. What is it to say that the bleached paper itself, which wraps the tobacco in a cigarette form, is not partly liable for some of the disastrous diseases we have found?
I would agree, and now, I'd also wonder why he did not address the chemicals that are in the filter of a cigarette.
Correct.
Right.
And the second point, the second query that I had that I will not get an answer to, but
sorry,
I am a lifelong smoker and a defective human. And I'm wondering if indeed, since I do not know and will never know my mother, if indeed she may have smoked while I was gestating. And what impact does that have on the gestating fetus as to the future life of nicotine reliance? I don't use the word dependence. I use the word reliance. I have come to rely on nicotine. I also use pouches. I also have a vape device, which I think is just, it's not smoking, pal. It's not, don't fool yourself. There is nothing like a cigarette. But that being said, that's my whole spiel, and I am not, and yet I am, a defective human.
Understood, sir. Thank you, as always, for your input.
Thank you, Sherry. Okay. Carry on.
Thank you. Have a great day, Jeff. I think we had another caller. Hello. Hey, Ty. I think we might be having some technical difficulties, so I will be going on to the bill that passed the Senate, even though none of us really wanted that. So what the other impacts, the key provisions of this bill, as many of you might know, I write a script just so I can stay focused. So many key provisions of the bill are that it extends the 2017 Trump tax cuts that were going to expire in January of 2026, including new deductions. And it said something about tips for overtime, but those are in specific instances, and you have to report how many tips, or, you know, the amount of tips. It raises the salt tax. So it raises salt deduction cap from $10,000 to $40,000 temporarily. So I looked up what the salt tax was, and now I forgot. So I have to look it up again. If any of you have questions or insight on the bill and how it will impact Oregonians, that would be great. So it's state and local tax. That's what it was. So on the state and local taxes, the deduction cap went from $10,000 to $40,000 temporarily. spending reduction. So as many of you, and this really bothers me, but in a certain way it's FAFO, and I hate to say that, I am not enjoying a lot of the F around and find out things, because we're going to see deep and impactful cuts to Medicaid and SNAP, thanks to Republicans in the House and the Senate. And it seems that cruelty is the point. It's their entire point of putting this bill forward. The CBO has now stated that their estimate of 10 to 12 million U.S. citizens will lose access to Medicaid and or SNAP. MedPAC also chimed in for that. Border and immigration, this bill adds over $100 billion. Okay, so $100 billion is going to be offered and given to ICE and border enforcement funding, including detention expansion, so corporate jails, right, and new asylum fees. We have almost 650,000, that's a town worth of homeless people in this country. Kids, moms, dads, aunts, uncles, veterans. 650,000 of these people lack shelter, lack, in many cases, lack food, and they want to give $100 billion to ICE for corporate jails and asylum fees. Insane. It's ridiculous. I'm furious. And somebody gets to talk to me in an anxious state. Hello. Hi, Tangent. Oh, boy, Tangent. Hi, Tangent. How are you today?
I'm really great. I wanted to just offer a few ideas about the smoking. But I smoke also since I didn't start in high school. I noticed most people started earlier than me. They were really focused on quitting. But a guy taught me how to roll my own. And he smoked like imported cigarettes, said they were better and such.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so I'm now 67, and I have no health issues that I know of. I don't see doctors, I see chiropractors, naturopaths. But what I wanted to say is, one, about when you do want to quit, and I did quit for some time, I found the gum was really great. And the thing is you didn't have to take it every 2 hours. I could chew a piece of gum all day long. And I thought that perhaps smoking was a lot more of an oral sensation.
It has
a lot to do with the oral.
Yeah.
Putting something in your mouth, basically, if you will. Or doing something with your mouth. I don't know. There's a thought. The other thing I wanted to mention was that nicotine is not physically addictive. And before you jump up and down, I was in jail for some time, and you couldn't have cigarettes. So basically, I just realized that, I can't have them. And I didn't feel any withdrawal, nervousness.
That's interesting.
Any of that.
That's interesting.
But the thing is when I tried to quit, or if I ran out of cigarettes at home, I would immediately get nervous and pay, you know, like looking for butts or going to the store or what have you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Habit
so
forming.
That
was your habit forming part of your brain.
Yeah, but it's a psychological thing.
Yeah.
You're used to doing it. Yeah, habit. Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Sure.
Interesting.
Those two things. Yeah, I'm not encouraging anybody to smoke, but I do think there's something about rolling your own. You have to take time to do it. You can't just pop another one in your mouth. They'll go out if you don't smoke them for a while. You know, they'll just go out if you don't keep puffing on them. So then that's longer, the more breathing you're doing and less smoking. Okay. But those are some things I put out.
I've known people that would light a cigarette, and this is when you smoked in the house or whatever they did.
Oh, yeah.
They would light a cigarette, and they'd put it in the ashtray and go off and do something else, and that whole thing would burn away.
Yeah. Hey, when I was a kid, when I was about 15 or so, my parents both smoked 3 packs of L&M's a day each. And I put up a little sign that said, "Your smoking is hazardous to my health," on the television.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. I'm Gen X, man, and our parents would leave the windows up no matter how much we begged. They smoked in the house. They did all, and I didn't. When I was smoking, when my kids were little, I smoked outside.
My mom came to babysit.
Like
I made her go outside until the winter came, and then I said, okay, sit in the corner with the window open.
Oh, you know, that killed me when my parents quit smoking. We had to smoke outside. We couldn't smoke inside. Because for us, it was no big deal for us to get suffocated. But for them, they were like, oh, no, mustn't. We mustn't be around it. We're non-smokers now.
I'd like to address this thing about secondhand, and maybe even heard of third-hand smoke. I just think that's a... I think they're blaming everything I'm guessing comes mostly from air pollution, let's say asthma, all the way down, you know, to cancers, smoking. It's their scapegoat for everything. And now the guilty smokers, you're ruining it for everyone.
Yep.
I will say this. I read this book called Man's Higher Consciousness by a gentleman called Dr. Hilton Hotema, who was writing under a pseudonym because the government didn't like what he had written. But this book said that he had done autopsies and that a lifelong Chicagoan who did not smoke, his lungs would be just as filthy as a smoker's.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Okay, Tangent, I have another caller. Thanks for calling,
I'm
sir.
So glad.
I appreciate you. Hi, Matthew. How are you doing today? Hello, Matthew? Are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Matthew. What would you like to talk about?
Well, you were just speaking of the big, beautiful bill and all the things that it would take. And, you know, it's interesting. I was just listening to the news this morning, and millions of illegals came into our country over the last administration, and most of them taking our medical care for free.
No.
Food.
Not true.
That's true.
Not true. Not
that
true.
Is true.
No, it is absolutely
you
not true.
Say that's not, you
it is absolutely
say it's not.
Not. Illegal
true.
People, undocumented.
Illegal people. Illegal people.
Undocumented.
That's number one.
Stop. This is my show
illegal.
Just for a moment.
They came into our
stop.
Country illegally, didn't
stop.
They?
Stop.
Did they not
stop.
Come into our country illegally?
They many of them are seeking asylum, and actually
illegally,
many more.
But
if
they did
you
it
remember,
illegally.
I'm
they
not going to
illegally.
Argue with you. I'm either you're
well,
going
you're
to speak
wrong.
Civilly.
Not, see, you
goodbye.
People cannot.
Ty, thank you. Okay, well, so first off, for those who don't know. Undocumented, and I said illegal people, and my bad, undocumented people cannot, I repeat, cannot access public funds. Refugees can. If people come into the United States as a refugee and they are undocumented, they have access to medical and food on an emergency basis. But if you just come in as an undocumented person, it is not a crime. It is a civil offense, one. And two, you do not qualify for food or medical aid because you do not have a social security number. The emergency food and aid that is offered to refugees is because they are given a specialized U.S. tax number to their individuality, and they have access to those things. Yes, and I'm totally okay with that. I'm totally okay with that. And it looks like we have another caller. Do we have a name? Hi, Santiago. Hello, Santiago.
Yeah.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
Haven't talked to you in a while. I haven't seen you in a while. How you been?
Hello?
Hello, Santiago.
Yeah.
Hi.
I just
how you been?
I want to know why you don't think... Yeah, I want to know why you're for illegal people coming into our country.
I'm not.
You are.
Oh, this is not Santiago. This is Matthew. Ty...
There we go. Can you hear me?
Hi, Santiago.
Good morning.
So Matthew did not hang up. We need to hang up on him, please.
That's so funny. You know, I whenever I talk to, you know, whenever you hear folks talk like that, it's not really surprising, but I mean, I think it's important to remember that, like, illegal versus legal, however they see it, you know, that for them, it's like for me as a Chicano, like, regardless of my paper citizenship, like, culturally, I've never been accepted, and it's something you got to deal with these, you know, dudes who have these white supremacist adjacent beliefs. Like, they're so entitled. It's really sad.
You are more than welcomed here. You are so totally welcomed here. You do not even know. And you don't even bat an eye at people like Matthew. Because people don't want to learn.
My entire life. You know, they always got something to say, but they ain't doing nothing. But yeah, no, I mean, it's, anyway, point is the reason I was calling is, first of all, thank you for having Dr. Ray on, a lot of really good information, and kind of piggybacking on something, you know, Tangent was talking about. I think a lot of people don't recognize that, like, you know, anything you do in excess will hurt you. You know, my ancestors, we smoked tobacco. I mean, granted, you know, it was, it was for special occasions, but we did. And anything that is not done in moderation will hurt you. And, yes. And especially abusing sacred herbs like tobacco, you know, people don't think of tobacco as a sacred herb, but we did. And, colonialism likes to take things that are sacred and just drive them into the ground. And, especially in our climate where capitalists have to have ways to have people cope with the fact that life is so stressful while they're being exploited for cash. Correct. That they want them to be able to have something that takes the edge off. So you don't actually have to fix anything. You just have to fix how people think about the thing. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yep. But, that's a fact.
But, more importantly, this big, beautiful bill, you know, the thing that really frustrates me about it is that, like, you know, I'm glad that the Democrats voted in opposition of it. It was interesting to see the two or three Republicans who came out against it. But I think we really need, you know, especially if, you know, if this, you know, they're having the next No Kings protest.
Yeah.
I think really taking it to the next level and telling these Democrats, you know, look, if you guys don't give us what we want, we're not going to give you our votes. Because, right. I mean, it's one thing to vote in opposition, but, like, there's only a handful of Democrats who are actually trying to cause a ruckus, if there is any to be caused.
You know,
Bernie Sanders, AOC, happy to see that Zohran Mamdani passed the primary. But I think it's really interesting to see a lot of the Democrats, you know, especially in New York State, but even some outside of there that are reverting back to, like, early 2000s Islamophobia.
Right.
You know, you see a lot of the Democrats who support Israel. And I think really challenging a lot of Democrats who support Israel, because I think Israel is a great litmus test for people's humanity.
Yep.
Because if you can stand on the sidelines and justify children being amputated from bombs that are bought and paid for by the U.S., I think that says a lot about where you would stand in terms of having your constituencies, medical supports, and social supports being pulled out from under them in order to support more pointless micromilitarism. I think it's the big beautiful bill. It really sucks, but I mean, it's not really surprising. You know, we're in a very fascist adjacent moment, and there's so many people who are so desperate they're willing to believe anything, even if it means it brings the roof down on their own heads.
Thank you, Santiago. I have another caller. I really appreciate your time and your voice. We need to get together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tuasi?
Good morning.
Yeah. Hi, Tuasi. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing all right. You know, this bill, it's terrifying.
Yes.
Part of what's terrifying is the increase in funding for ICE.
Yes.
Because, personally, I have faced their terror. Like, I know in a direct lived experience, what it feels like to be taken by DHS, and all they need all they needed before was one agent and one judge, and they could deport you. Now they're doing renditions, so they just, like, hundreds of times over in this bill funded ICE to the point where it has more funding than the United States Marine Corps.
That's what I heard, and I haven't had a chance to look deeper into that, but the military, but the defense budget for the United States is larger than seven nations comparable to ours, one, and two, it's almost $1 trillion.
So the other thing about the about this spending bill that is terrifying is it cuts food aid.
Yeah.
So in Oregon, it's already approximately 1 in 5 children who go to sleep hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much higher than that in indigenous communities, where we still have direct commodities given to us in white label federal government food boxes. I don't know if anybody out there is familiar with receiving federal government food, but
the federal
government has to give food to indigenous nations because they are still so oppressed and dispossessed. And that food aid is cut under this bill.
Yep.
So, you know, I have in my family far right indigenous pipeline, pro pipeline oil transport family. These are my uncles that are, I have to look up to them. They're my elders. But their grandchildren are going to be facing hunger because food is being taken off of their plates by this bill.
Yeah,
indigenous
by Republicans. By Republicans. It's not just the bill. It's who is passing it. The Republicans in the United States Senate and House are pushing this through to give tax breaks and cash to the wealthiest 1 in 10% of our population, as 650,000 people remain shelterless and more, as you state, indigenous communities lose the support they need to so much as feed their children.
Well, Deb Haaland didn't do us any favors with her capital D next to her name. So I don't want to pretend that whether you're blue or red, you're doing anything for indigenous nations, because let's just pretend.
I get
If the land was given back, it's not like we would put people on a forced march, but that's what continues to happen to us.
Yes.
Even now, the land that is still our land is being taken currently in Oregon. And I don't see Tina Kotek standing in the way. So
I need to connect at some point. Can you email pdx.progressivetv@gmail.com and send me your email? I want to talk with you. Because I have to go.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you, Tuasi. I really appreciate you. I would like to interview you at some point. And that was Tuasi, and I really do want to interview him. Maybe I should do a campaign of interview Tuasi, because he consistently calls with insightful comments and information that we in the general public don't have, right? Because we're living our lives. And so for those of you who believe, oh, now Sherry's just cutting people off and not listening to other sides and so much for progressive, tolerance and stuff like this. One, it's not my responsibility to tolerate hate, nor is it my, nor am I mandated to, for one. And I refuse to. Two, you are more than welcome to have a different perspective. You are more than welcome to have a different opinion and speak it as a human being. Talk about your disgruntledness with the way the government works for undocumented people, for poor people, for the uneducated, for the rich, for however you wish. If you can do it respectfully and have an actual conversation instead of yelling in your phone and making all of our listeners have to turn down the radio or turn off because we're tired of the hate, then I don't need, I will bounce you. And that's just because we don't need that here. We are working for progress. I don't want to live in 1950. I wasn't alive in 1950, and I don't want to be there, right? I want to be in 2025. I want to work for progress for the American people and people around the world. I want to feed the poor. I want to house the unhoused. I want to make sure people have access to jobs with living wages, and they have access to homes that aren't over a 50% burden on their income, and they can actually do things with their kids. They can actually go to a nice restaurant once a quarter or whatever, right? We don't need hate here. I want to thank you for listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio. You guys are rock stars, and it's about time for the next show to come on. And sadly, I didn't look at the schedule, so I don't know what's coming on next. I'm not taking any calls, so if people are wanting to call in, I'm not taking any calls because the show's just about done. This big, beautiful bill is a travesty. And if the House, Mike Johnson wants to pass it, J.D. Vance wants to pass it, they don't care. The Heritage Foundation does not care about the American people. They're trying to change out current career federal employees with new people who are yes people, who are willing to fall in line with their way of thought, no matter how toxic it is. I appreciate you all for listening to me today babble on and on.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO Portland.